Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Televi, and joining me in studio this evening are Derek Janser from Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Dricus Combrink from Capicraft. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS 41392, you can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Dricus, Derek, nice to see you both this evening. Derek, it's the first trading day for September, and it wasn't a great one. In fact, I think of the top 40, only three shares closed up, and that was Naspers, Bidvest and ShopRite, and then maybe Capitec flat. What was the angst in the market today?
So look, we finished the week off on a higher note than what we've been used to of late. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. August was a tough month out there, and it was just really an emerging market, and then also very much specific to SA. We came in this morning, you know, we saw a little bit of propping up as we went into Friday's close, but certainly some risk off this morning. You know, there were tariffs that were introduced this morning from President Trump, and, you know, the general sentiment and the mood was that of risk off out of equities into cash, and certainly some significant selling pressure. I think things like Sasol was down about 6%, a big move on that side. And really just Naspers holding the market up. So really this risk-averse approach is very, very difficult to try and bottom pick in this market and say where this low or where things are going to go from here. I mean, things are cheap at the moment, but they could get cheaper.
We've been saying this the last few months.
It's called a value trap.
Yes. Because the one thing that didn't change much today was the Rand, though, and it held steady. And that's quite interesting if you talk about risk aversion, and you'd expect it to get whacked in a trade war standoff. But and also Argentina, you saw over the weekend introducing capital controls, defaulting on debt. I mean, that's a economic horror show if ever there was one. And yet, as far as the currency went, it was quite stable today.
We've had massive outflows out of our bond market, foreign outflows out of our bond market in August for most of the year. But there's been bouts of those foreigners returning, you know, the carry trade returning. I won't be surprised if we see a bit of that in September, if there's less news from the trade front, which I suspect there might be, because they've expended now their most effective weapons. You know, the cost-to-benefit ratio of extra tariffs on what they've already announced, you know, it's just not a...
you mean from both sides?
From both sides. So they've expended their most effective weapons. From year on, you start to get a higher cost-to-benefit ratio, or a lower one, you know, more cost than benefit. You start hurting yourself more than your competitors. So I think that the rhetoric will be slightly less aggressive from here, and that the market is, global market's already pricing in a lot of bad news. If you strip out a few tech shares and growth shares, you know, global markets are sitting at low valuations from a multiple perspective, you know, from a traditional multiple perspective. When you relate that to the very low yield curve, you know, you talk about the equity risk premium. The U.S. equity risk premium is sitting close to 6%, which is more or less where it goes to, or as cheap as it gets in a recession.
Derek, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Just to add to that and bring it home to the local currency, I mean, I think what we need to look at, particularly over the last 3 to 4 months, is this complete reversal that we've seen in the U.S. Treasury market. And we've seen U.S. Treasury yields move to, call it, 1.5% on the 10-year Treasury. Now, you talk about, call it, movements into safe havens and movements into the dollar. Well, those U.S. Treasuries are your likely home for, you know, holding dollar assets or dollar cash, per se. Now, that yield has suddenly become not as attractive. So, you know, I'm not surprised that the currency is holding up a little bit sort of stronger than what we'd expect in the current sort of risk aversion approach. What we've seen is very lofty U.S. markets, U.S. Treasuries coming down, and that gap has widened quite significantly. So I'm a little bit circumspect about what needs to give here. Either, you know, you need to see markets come back slightly, or growth is going to stay intact, particularly from a U.S. perspective, and you're going to start to see that yield curve start to bump up from a yield perspective. So there's a little bit of a mismatch. I'd be quite careful in the current global environment, to be honest.
You talked about... it's tricky to bottom pick stocks, but there's a question on ShopRite. And ShopRite, interestingly, as we said at the start of the show, was one of the shares that held up today. And so the question is, taking into account current and future uncertain economic conditions, is ShopRite at the best level, at between sort of 110, 150 Rand, brackets moderate to high risk to buy for a long term, or is Whitey Bisson's hard work being undone?
No, I don't think this is a management problem. In general, do you think the retailers have walked open eyes into a slowing economy without restricting their expansive nature? You know, so that's the one problem, and we're seeing them pay now with lower margins. And I don't think that they're done with the margin contraction that we're seeing at the moment. Yeah. That might continue for another 6 months, 18 months, I don't know, I'm not sure. But there's enough other stuff in the economy happening at the moment that's going to see them have margin pressure. We still got administrative costs rising faster than what they can
pass through to the customers.
And secondly, there's a lot of promotions going on. If you go through Massmart's statement last week, I think the main thing isn't the volume. Volume is not a problem. It's not a revenue problem per se. Revenue growth is slow. It's anemic because the economy is slow. Yeah. But that's not the problem per se. Is that they're discounting themselves into lower margin at the moment to protect market share in a difficult economy. And secondly, with that, together with that, you're having these overheads from administrative costs that are actually increasing faster than what they can pass through.
Okay, so you think 6 to 18 months could be still compression on margins, but does that reflected?
The question is how much of that is reflected?
Yeah, okay. No. So, Derek, do you think that's reflected in the future?
I think there's a few things you need to take into account when looking at the retail sector and obviously ShopRite specific. So you're looking at a company that's cut its costs down to as far as they can go in a very tough economic environment. We then look at the market, let's look at the retail sector specifically. It's been completely re-rated to the downside because of South Africa and the risks associated with South Africa. And we're sitting in a very low growth, if not negative growth environment at the moment. So there's a few things that could happen, and I don't know when that inflection point is going to take place. But if we do see a re-rating towards South Africa, for whatever reason it may be, I can't tell you what that catalyst is. If we do see a re-rating towards South Africa, then you are going to see the average PE across the retail sector pick up incrementally. Okay? The costs have been cut down to the levels that we know at the moment. If we do see the backdrop of a little bit of growth, even 1.5%, and ideally 2% growth in a perfect sort of case scenario over the next 2 years, this share price can kick up very, very quickly. But I don't know what that catalyst is going to be. So to answer the question, in finality, I think it's cheap. Will it get cheaper? It could do. But is it a share I want to own looking 3 to 5 years out? Yes, it is a share I want to own. I really do back management, and I think this has got a significant stronghold within the South African context and outside of South Africa as well. So I don't know where the bottom is. But if I take a 3 to 5 year view, then I'm certainly going to start nibbling and just be patient with it.
Okay.
Yeah. What they actually need is some food inflation. If they get food inflation, which they will get in the next 12 to 24 months, well, better than they've had now, and then it will be easier to pass that through.
Yeah. Okay. Just hopping over to the US, do you, either of you follow a company called the Trade Desk? It's a US stock.
No.
I mean, I presume it's a trading platform.
No idea.
Okay.
I don't know it.
Okay.
There's a gazillion of these things.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, just theoretically, would you buy kind of a trading platform? What is the theory behind buying?
Well, it's like looking at the JSE results, and earnings were down significantly. Liquidity is low. There's no brokerage. People are not buying and selling shares. People are moving out of equities and into near money market solutions or cash solutions. Very much the opposite is happening in the US context, where you've had one of the biggest bull runs that we've seen of history. There's lots of movement of stock. The brokerage is being written. I think that they're writing significant revenue in the current market environment. Mm. So, you know, I think it would be a big benefit for the backdrop of what's happening, in the US markets at the moment.
Mm. Okay. All right. Okay, so that's the theoretical approach. There are some smaller shares that are outperforming the JSE, and the one is Altron. Why? And is this a stock to watch, is the question. I mean, Altron has actually been superb.
Yeah, it's been a classical turnaround story. Some management changes, got rid of non-core assets, and all of a sudden some of the core assets started performing. They still are, I believe. Some of the core business units will be growing, I think, at double digits over the short to medium term. And some of that revenue stream is outside SA and the UK, and not doing too badly in this environment.
No. I mean, actually, you know, let's just take a moment and, yeah. and admire the charts, because we don't see many of those these days.
Yeah, especially
in the mid-cap sector.
Yeah, I think the share price has gotten ahead of itself. It doesn't, you know, exhibit the same value that it gave at about 16 or 15 bucks. But still, I think there's some momentum in some of the core business units.
Yeah. Derek, yeah,
I would concur with the argument at hand here, saying that I think it's a strong turnaround strategy. We've seen a lot of it, but to be honest, I need to kick the tires a little bit more and understand exactly what the prospects of this business are looking forward, and go and delve down into the individual business units and see where the signature assets are. But they're certainly playing in a niche space that's obviously delivering good headline earnings per share. So that's something that's commendable in the current market environment.
Yeah. Question on Mediclinic as a buyer at current levels. I think everyone got so burnt by Mediclinic.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how questions have dropped off. You can kind of tell when people have capitulated or just lost complete interest.
I've been avoiding, and this is a global story, I've been avoiding your pharmaceuticals and your hospital type assets. They've had a tremendous run in the Western markets the last 2 decades. You know, the average spend on Medicare in the US has grown in the last few decades from something like 3% to double digits, or percentage of GDP. Is that going to happen again? You know, is it going to quadruple again over the next few decades? I'm not so sure. And it's become very much a regulatory
A football, I think.
Yeah, regulatory football. It's a political football, yeah. So I'd be very, I don't like stuff that's got too much regulatory risk to the downside. A lot of stuff has got regulatory risk, but it actually fixes the moat or widens the moat for the business, like the tobacco industry. I think another great example is the midstream, the pipeline companies in the US. Where environmentalists are stopping new pipelines from being built, that entrenches the existing assets out there. But a lot of other regulatory risk when it comes to people's health, you know, that's a difficult one to call going forward politically.
I mean, it's quite interesting. The argument for Mediclinic was that, you know, the demographic argument that you had, aging populations would need more healthcare, certainly hasn't panned out in the results of the share price. And of course then you have NHI hanging over the entire, I guess, hospital and pharmaceutical and medical aid sector in South Africa. Derek, do you think it's just impossible to call how this is going to play out?
Look, I think, and we probably spoke about it a month or so ago on the show, where this is a classic case example of a South African company trying to establish itself out of South African boundaries and didn't get it right, to be honest. You know, they've taken a lot of pain in their offshore asset base, lots of issues in Switzerland, but I do think it's priced in quite a lot of the bad news. So again, as we talk about the broader market and as you talk about a bit of potential leverage that's outside of our control to the upside, I think a lot of the bad news is probably in the price. But it's going to be driven by fundamentals. You need to see some structural fundamental turnaround, particularly outside South Africa, to give you a high conviction buy on it. And I think it's probably going to stay in a range between that sort of 55 to 65 type level until you see confirmation, fundamentals, interims and finals being released that there's structural fundamental turnaround. So, you know, it doesn't excite me at this stage.
Okay. I'm going to leave it there for the moment. So if you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at businessdaytv using the hashtag stockwatch. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to international markets, starting with the United States at the moment. I'm not sure if those stocks are going to come up, but it's a holiday. Haven't been paying attention, shall we say. Across the Atlantic, the FTSE 100 up 1%, the CAC 40 up a quarter, and the DAX trading about a tenth of a percent to the good. One gets wrapped up in one's own little world here in the JSE. And still with me in studio are Derek Jansen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Dricus Combrink from Capicraft. There's a question on shorting high-yield credit. So we were talking about the yield curve,
Shorting high yield credit in the US, I presume.
I think so. So the question is, rating agencies have been complacent and allowed debt EBITDA and debt equity ratios to deteriorate without a corresponding reduction in credit ratings. Credit spreads are very tight. It additionally provides a hedge against the cyclical risk from the long equity side of one's portfolio. That's quite a complex question. I presume you're talking about international high yield credit.
Yes.
What do you think?
So I personally think this is the long and short of it, is you're basically calling a top in the equity markets. That's really what you're trying to do. Is there's lots of cash out there at the moment, and you know, when you see corrections, it happens very fast, very quickly, and in my short time in the market, you know, you obviously it happens so quickly like this. So you've got to call a top. So the trade is probably not a bad call, to be honest, but I do think that it's going to take time to play out, and you need to see some degree of default that takes place, particularly from the global arena and the US arena, to actually see that trade play out. At the moment, I think it might be a little bit early, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, and once again, the cost of carry. So there's a.
So just perhaps
there's a use. If you're going to short something, it's going to cost you something. If you're shorting something that has a high yield, you have to pay that yield to the guy you're borrowing it from. So if you're borrowing SA bonds, or if you're shorting SA bonds at 8.5% a 10-year, then you need to pay the other guy at the other side 8.5%. Plus there's a lending script fee included. And the problem is, the longer you wait, the less profitable your trade is.
Unless it happens immediately, it's not a great
hedge. Yeah, so timing is very important with these
getting
things.
Getting that timing right.
And the more prudent way to do it, if you're willing to write off a certain percentage a year of your portfolio, is to buy credit default swaps. The problem with credit default swaps is this, they aren't homogenous by any... they aren't homogenous, yeah. And the problem is when it comes to certain sectors in the bond market, especially corporate US bonds, they've become very covenant light. So normally a CDS can trigger once they breach certain covenants, but those covenants just aren't in place. So they need to default outright before the CDS pays out. And that can also be a problem, especially for sovereign. You've got different products out there.
I mean, is there another way, a less complicated way, of hedging yourself against a decline in equity markets?
Gold.
Gold or short the market.
Okay, yeah. So just short the index.
Buy a put on the S&P.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's it's gotten cheaper again. But it's because interest rates are really low, it's quite cheap.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, there was actually a question on that came through on the weekend asking whether positive market sentiment following the G7, I don't know if it was the G7 per se, but I guess talking about last week that we had a bit of a recovery, might mean that a wealth protection asset like gold and gold shares would decline, while other investment options would pick up. So now we're talking almost the opposite of what we've just been discussing. I guess that's the first question. The other one is, were there any stocks over the past month that were heavily sold off unnecessarily in the panic? And you talked about a really rough August, like City Lodge, that would be a great buy should an uptrend continue through September.
So, I mean, just look at how you're trying to position yourself. We're talking about buying gold, and we're talking about ultimately a sentiment trade. Now, would I want to own the likes of a Harmony, a Goldfields, or an Anglo Gold? Yeah, at certain times of the cycle. And at the moment, they're quite well positioned given the uptick in the gold price. But that's a very short-lived moment in the last 10 years. So, you know, all you're doing is you're trying to time sentiment. Now, trying to time sentiment, sentiment is driven by information flow. And the information flow is driven by, at this stage of the game, tweets that get sent out by President Trump and trade wars that are announced and tariffs that may go up or may go down. And this is unpredictable stuff. So you could position yourself in, let's call it a gold ETF and hold the physical gold outright. But, you know, it comes down to trying to call that sentiment. And ultimately, you know, my job as an investor is really to pick stocks that have got fundamental underpin to them, you know. I'm not trying to call the change in sentiment from a week-to-week basis. I want to pick up quality companies, quality management, fundamentals make sense, and take a view of 3 to 5 years where I'm going to, you know, outstrip the likes of cash and some other returns out there. So it's been a hell of a difficult to do that over the last 3 or 4 years, but certainly trying to position yourself and hedge yourself calling sentiment is a very, very difficult game to navigate.
And imagine a very stressful game.
Very stressful.
Yeah, I've no idea what the market's going to do over the next month or next year. I've no idea. I've no idea if SA is going to turn around and deliver fantastic 5-year returns, or we are going to become a failed state. You know, there's a probability that you can assign to each, and each investor and portfolio manager must decide that to themselves, but that's where diversification comes in, is to say that there's probability of different scenarios playing out in the future, and I have to construct my portfolio accordingly so that I don't get decimated if one of those scenarios plays out.
Yeah.
So the art of investment management is the portfolio construction part, and that's what separates good investment managers from the bad ones.
Yeah. Just and specifically, as this person did ask about City Lodge, it has been a quality company, but they have really come under pressure with occupancies declining, people tightening their belts. Yeah. But do you think they've been unnecessarily punished?
Look, remember, you're dealing in a very illiquid counter. I mean, this doesn't trade a lot of shares on a day-to-day / monthly or weekly basis. So, you know, when you do get caught up in a sharp sell-off and downweighting towards South Africa and an unwind out of equities, it can get punished unnecessarily a little bit further than some of the more liquid counters out there. Mm. I do think structurally it's in a very difficult space at the moment. You've also got things to contend with, like Airbnb as well. Mm. You know, you're dealing in a very, very competitive environment at the moment, given the backdrop of the South African economic environments structurally at the moment. Mm. So I'm a little bit circumspect, and it's always been a great share to own over the last 10 years, you know, and also a very high yield player. Where does it go to from here? Well, I think there needs to be some turnaround, particularly in the top 20 space, before I start looking at the likes of the City Lodge, before I can have an investment case behind it. So I still think I would stand
operational
back.
Leverage is huge. Mm. So if you suspect there's an upturn coming in the South African economy, this will be a great pick. But until then, you know, it goes both ways. So.
Yeah. Okay. Does the panel consider ratings agencies themselves defensive stocks?
Yeah.
Are they listed?
Buffett is a great proponent or investor in Moody's, I think. I think he owns Moody's and S&P. Yeah.
Are those the only two listed? Because there's a few ratings agencies
not sure.
out there.
Well, there's only three, and then there's an emerging market one, fourth one that's nobody really paying
is
attention to.
Is it GCR?
Something like that, yeah. So nobody's really paying attention to that one, but yeah.
So why, I mean, what makes them defensive stocks?
There's only three. It's oligopoly.
Yeah.
The same with, I think, even better example of oligopoly just down the road from that industry is the credit bureau agencies, which basically rates consumer debt or gives your credit score in the big economies. You've got basically two. It's Experian and TransUnion, and those two dominate the market, and they have enormous margins, and they almost always trade around a 30 price earnings ratio.
Mm.
Everybody needs their services. They need to be rated. So, you know, whether you get a triple A rating or a BB minus rating, you need the rating. So it's a consistent source of revenue for these rating agencies.
It takes decades to build a trust.
Mm. You know, which is interesting that it wasn't wholly decimated in the aftermath of 2007, 2008, when they did not cover themselves in glory by any stretch of the imagination. And I know, you know, I've spoken to bond investors like Andrew Kant at Future Growth. He says a good bond investor will do his own homework.
No,
he doesn't just use the ratings agencies, but they've managed to kind of create this edifice around themselves that is seemingly... not subject to
normally, by the time they downgrade something, it's too late.
Yeah.
You should have acted already. The market knows beforehand, or they act before these guys normally downgrade. Sometimes there's a surprise, and that can be nasty. But all the passive flows out there are determined by what the rating is. So investment-grade corporate bond fund or investment-grade sovereign bond fund, the allocation there is determined by the credit rating agencies, and that's the most important thing for them.
And I suppose this huge flood into passive investments and ETFs is a great thing for the ratings agencies. Just very quickly before I get to stock picks, and Derek, I know that you're picking cash, so just any comments on Bidvest results? I mean, they seem decent, and the share, as I said, was probably the best performer in the top 40 today. I mean, it's a remarkable performance, I thought.
Remarkable. And I mean, it's amazing to actually look at the growth that we sort of ticking the box as remarkable. So, you know, it just shows you what a tough economic environment we are in at the moment. But certainly a commendable result. I think it's a big salute to management team, and it also talks to the diversity of the business in terms of the levers that they can pull in a very tough economic environment. So certainly well received by the market, was up on the day in a very tough market today. So
would you buy them?
I would. Is it a company I want to own over the next 3 to 5 years? Certainly, it is. So, you know, if it does sort of hover around these 180 levels, then it's something that I would take a 3 to 5 year view on. You know, I think it's well positioned.
Well, maybe that's your stock pick this evening, because you weren't going to pick, you were going to go for cash and keep your powder dry. Drikus, you're actually picking a company called CMP. It's a, tell us about it.
Compass Mineral, Mount Salt. 60% of salt, rock salt in the world is used for highway dicing. That's so that the snow melts and you can actually drive on the highway in winter months. It's been under tremendous pressure the last few years because of the global warming theme. So global warming is basically priced into this stock. It's a very...
What expectation that there won't be huge snowfalls, therefore the demand for their salt will...
Exactly. So it's trading at very low valuations. 6.5% dividend yields with cash to spare after that. They're also a producer of sulfates of potash, which is a high-grade potash. And the share has been under pressure recently because, you know, potash companies are... earnings will be a bit lower because there's this agricultural export issue to China, soybeans, etc. But eventually they will plant something else in soybeans which will use more potash. So longer term, the demand for potash will rise if there's a continued trade war between the US and China. And it's a very defensive business, very stable demand at the salt level at least. And they've got basically no competitors.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, for the salt business at least.
Love a company with no competitors, but like Eskom. Derek, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Great to have you in studio. Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities, Drikus Combrink from Capicraft, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. You were going to go for cash and keep your powder dry. Drikus, you're actually picking a company called CMP. It's a, tell us about it.
Compass Mineral, Mount Salt. 60% of salt, rock salt in the world is used for highway dicing. That's so that the snow melts and you can actually drive on the highway in winter months. It's been under tremendous pressure the last few years because of the global warming theme. So global warming is basically priced into this stock. It's a very...
What expectation that there won't be huge snowfalls, therefore demand for their salt will...
Exactly. So it's trading at very low valuations. 6.5% dividend yields with cash to spare after that. They're also a producer of sulfates of potash, which is a high-grade potash. And the share has been under pressure recently because, you know, potash companies are... earnings will be a bit lower because there's this agricultural export issue to China, soybeans, etc. But eventually they will plant something else in soybeans which will use more potash. So longer term, the demand for potash will rise if there's a continued trade war between the US and China. And it's a very defensive business, very stable demand at the salt level at least. And they've got basically no competitors.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, for the salt business at least.
Love a company with no competitors, but like Eskom. Derek, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Great to have you in studio. Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities, Drikus Combrink from Capicraft, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.